So let's move on now to discussion of CDS.
I should start by saying that I am only a pretend classicist. I am really a digital librarian and information scientist who dabbles, enabled frequently by Ross. So in many ways, I am his fault.
You actually are multiple things. I had a conversation with Amy Friedlander. You get to count twice, like everything. We had a librarian. We had a librarian. You had classes. You had classes. And so you are two. You are one and one plus. You are two.
Yeah, there's more than one. You're not the first person to accuse me of that. As now a digital librarian, I'm very pleased that I get to comment on this, because citation and how you link things together is of paramount importance in the things that I do every day. And there are some nice threads in this paper of Neil's that I'd like to kind of pick out. He discusses this idea of simple versus continuous citation. That is, that citation can be a simple pointing at something, or it can refer to something over, you might call it a coordinate system. You can not only point to, say, a book, but you can point to a particular piece or range of that book. You can not only point to a picture, but you can point to a particular portion of that picture. And CTS really brings out a particular type of citation. It is in many ways a very simple system, and I like that. I will pick up on that thread in a little bit. It is a simple hierarchical citation method, and it reflects very well a lot of the kinds of citation that classicists already do. So we're quite used to pointing to, say, Iliad 6, lines 123 to 125. That is a hierarchical citation. We're starting with a work, then we're going into a section of that work, and then we're going into a particular range of coordinates within that work. The other nice thing about this is that one of the standard ways of digitally processing texts is to turn them into XML markup. And that has a hierarchical structure as well. So CTS is well prepared to deal with those kinds of hierarchical structures. So that's one thread. The need for hierarchical and continuous as in working across a continuum citation methods is very important. Another, and this is the one that Neil starts with, and I liked it more and more the more I thought about it, the idea that new forms of expression in scholarly output can end up allowing you to do lots of new and exciting things, but can also end up obscuring and even causing the complete loss of the sources. And he talks about how the move from the scroll to the codex resulted ultimately. You could make these interesting mashups of work plus scholium and so on, but you end up losing the original sources of those scholia in the process. There's danger of doing the same kind of thing in a digital environment as well. Great danger, in fact. And this comes out of a couple more sub-threads I'd like to pick out. That Neil and I will both rant about this at length, but it's typical when you're moving from one environment, from physical to digital, that that the initial initial expressions in a digital environment tend to very closely model the physical. So you end up with representations of how things work in your physical book when you move it to hypertext. You keep lots of stuff that may be extraneous. And you don't think about what the real underlying data model perhaps ought to be. And the obvious translation of a citation into the digital environment is the hyperlink. Citations are pointers, aren't they? I would argue actually that they're not pointers. The citation is really, if you're looking for a proper model in the digital realm, a citation is not a pointer. A citation is a query. A citation is a statement about something that you're referring to that gives you enough information to go and find that source, hopefully. It's not so horribly abbreviated that no one can figure out what it meant. So if a citation is really a query, then a hyperlink is not the right translation of that. The right translation of that is something like what Neil proposes with CTS, is a uniform resource name that can be hopefully processed by a computer program and turned into perhaps a query that will go and pull out the section of text that you're pointing to, or the image plus an annotation on it, whatever you might want. So hyperlinks are not enough. IDs are not enough as well. The big competing citation scheme that has wide adoption out in the world is the DigiLogic identifier. So you have what's basically a number, and you have a registry or set of registries where you say, okay, I've got this number. Give me the thing that actually refers to. This is good in that, unlike hyperlinks, DOIs hopefully don't degrade. They don't go away. And that brings back up the idea of new forms of expression obscuring or losing the originals. You put up a page that has hyperlinks to all of your sources in it. That's great. In 10 years, will those hyperlinks still point to anything? No, they may not. So your citation scheme is completely blown, essentially. So IDs aren't enough, though, because they don't have any semantics themselves. You can't look at one. A human being can't look at one and figure out what it means. It's just a number. And if your infrastructure goes away or becomes unavailable, you're in the same kind of trouble that you were before. So I like the idea of having a digital citation scheme that mirrors standard ways in which scholars think about how to reference things. And CTS does that in a very nice way. So we need citations that, digital citations that are distributed, where there's not just one place that you go to look up what this means, where you have something like the domain name system, where you can distribute lookups, where there can be several registries, and if one happens not to be available today, you just fall over to the next one. It still works. We need citations that are still human readable, that you can still look at the thing and reverse engineer it if you have to. That you can look at it and understand it and write your own system to dereference it. And we need things that degrade gracefully, again, in a way that that typical hydrolinks don't, because they're pointers. They either are dereferenceable or they're not.
Classes are good at degrading, but not gracefully.
Yes.
In all cases.
Exactly. So we need to be able to do it as gently as possible. So I wanted to finish up just with one more nice little thread in a quote. Neil talks at the end about our fondness for complexity and our comfort with complexity. And it's a sort of contrast with the CTS proposal that he makes and the implementation he has, which is really, really simple. I mean, it's nice. I like it. As a at least still part-time programmer, simple is the way to go. And I wanted to mention Gall's law, which states that a complex system that works is invariably bound to evolve from a simple system that works. The inverse proposition also appears to be true. A complex system designed from scratch never works and cannot be made to work. You have to start over in the simple working system. So, I also have a question, though. CTS works deals very well with already digital, already in some way at least available online stuff. How are we going to cite stuff that's not online yet but might be in 5, 10, 15 years? Can we come up with a simple declarative way to do this that we hope someone will be able to look at and reverse engineer down the road? Or that will, as I said, just degrade gracefully. Right now, it might just go and pull something out of WorldCat and say, okay, the physical book is in this library near to you. But in 5 years, when we've gotten a grant to digitize it, it might actually go to the thing itself or into the thing itself. And can we do that sort of thing as well? That would be sort of my challenge here. I couldn't find anything.
I'll try to respond to that. Maybe before that, I'd like to just also expand slightly on one throwaway comment I made in the opening paragraph about one example of ways I think some of the work at the STOA has been undervalued. And the expansion I'd like to just add to that in the context of this meeting is that I find this incredibly exciting, and it's great to see all these people. And I'm just wondering whether, when I get home, the Greg Crane reality distortion field is going to dissipate. and I'm going to find that I can't really identify any evidence for the center of gravity changing at all in classes. I'm not so sure that I'm going to still believe that in another 24 hours when I don't have these.
One, two, three.
Right. And many, right? One, two, three, many? That's my fear. Yes. And what's the age cutoff here? I don't see the younger generation, and I don't see, I'm happy I don't see the APA, but still, the number here is small. And Greg may be right. I hope he is. I don't know why Ross shows up to work every day. I don't know if he believes you. But whether he does or not, there's just enormous. I don't think there's this clear objective evidence that we're succeeding necessarily. But whether or not there is, I know there wasn't 10 years ago.
Oh, well, you look like you're.
I agree.
10 years ago, there was not. And so the only point I wanted to add is a footnote, is that the people who have been doing this for 10 years have been making an enormous leap of faith. And whether they're right or wrong to do it, I think it's. I just want to sort of salute that, and particularly note that Ross is. He showed up for work a lot of days for a lot of years, and we've all got stories about how bad this was. The first time my dissertation advisor looked at my CD to prove it for me. He pointed out that my fancy computer printer must have made a mistake because there was this little squiggles on there. It's the first time he'd ever seen an email address. I think maybe the first time he'd ever seen an at sign. But you know, that's a kind of benign example. But there are lots of examples that aren't benign. And there are a lot of people in this room who have put up with a lot of stuff for a long time. I just think
I don't even respond to that because you've been asking me what if I believe it. Not there are various ways of reading it. It's, the question isn't whether the old ways of being will be successful. The old ways are dead and dying. The ways of thinking that are being discussed here, and not only the way, but the kind of conversations happening here is academic life. That ship is sailed. We're on the ship. There are people, you know, I think I mentioned a couple of names, like Cynthia Damon, and I think Don Mastronardi were thoughtful, were not in our group, but when Pope, you know, presented with ideas, say, oh, there's evidence. I haven't thought about that evidence. I should think about it. And they think, which is all I would expect for progress. There will be, because we had a meeting with classicists, Latinists at Tufts in June, and said, what about the future of digital stuff? We had them talk. And most of them were like, it's our tree bank. They said, I don't understand those lines. And they didn't see, they weren't able initially to see, you know, this is the same kinds of tactics they'd always been doing. But one of them, Cynthia Damon, walked away and actually thought about it. And so there's an intelligent workshop that people saying, what about editing? What do our texts look like? What are our, and I thought that was immense progress. Guys like Archievsky, our first true entry into the evil empire. So he just got tenured at Harvard as a product of this, and some of his best work is on cipher, which you would call cipher instruction, parallel text analysis. So the world in which we live, this is the world.
All I'm trying to say is there was not this world 10 or 15 years ago.
This world,
and people have been here slogging away for 10 or 15 years, and I just wanted to.
It was that guy from
Kentucky. There are a lot of people in this room, but I just wanted to signal that deserves recognition. It would be easy today to say we're succeeding, and so it's, of course it was easy 10 years ago to realize.
Oh no!
And that's patently not.
Well, once Ross McGee lost the ball and started hammering, it was pretty hard for anybody to stand up to this guy. As some of us know, we were about to run over by him.
Anyway, to respond to a couple of these points just briefly. I think I would argue for probably a more naive kind of view of classics than he was suggesting. Not just simple, but also naive, in that I think citations, to a certain extent, we can view them as sort of illustrating or reflecting our domain model. You know, what things do we make? And in that sense, I think they're even more than queries. They are a kind of identifier. They're a way of naming things. And so, you know, look at what we cite. It's a kind of inventory of what we work with. So
from that point of view, slightly over technical there. In my lingo, a query is a declarative statement. This is what I want. You go figure out how to get it for me.
I guess the way of describing what I was trying to say. So in that sense, you know, a CTS URN is an assertion that really at one level is nothing more than asserting this thing exists. And so I don't care if it refers to something digital or something that's not digital. At that point, because that, as a declarative statement saying this is this, that's even below the question of how do I get at it, where do I go with it. It's not to say those aren't important, but there's no reason that one of the things I tried to do was to suggest that even below the level of sort of the lowest model of our services or everything else, these kinds of citations can be considered sort of more permanent.
They're useful without the infrastructure.
They're useful without the infrastructure, and their use, you know, ought to persist when infrastructure is changed.
I think that's perfect. And as the information side is part of me, likes that, because if it's in digital form in this way, you can do things like citation analysis on these things. very easily without needing to go in and retrieve anything else. You can have just the sources and still figure out, you know, what are the clusters of things that point to other things, what are the relationships. You can do all those kinds of data mining things without the necessary need to point to something.
I have an observation and then a question. I think the work, Neil, that you've been doing along with your collaborators, both on this business of defining citation and looking for computational models that mirror those definitions, as well as the stuff you've written in this context about what it means to publish and trying to interpret the idea of publication for a digital context, are really very important, very seminal. And I hear the echoes of these things in my head as I try to think about, you know, what's our publication strategy for Pleiades? What is our, you know, what's our archiving strategy? I keep coming back to the principles I think you've done such a good job articulating. And so I want to point out that that's, in the context of this volume we're trying to get to and everything else, I think that's a really important contribution for the whole community. Given that that's so
but.
I'm trying to make it not sound like a but, and that's why it's sounding like a but. I have to go from that really big appreciation and recognition to a really basic procedural question in the context of this particular proposal, which is, when will the string CTS be an IANA sanctioned URN?
Oh, that's a question I'd love to answer, because that's a perfect example of the kind of thing I would like to try to push forward through this group. One of the things I didn't talk about in this paper, but that Tom is referring to, is that the syntax and semantics that are spelled out in this are aimed at the Internet Engineering Task Force's standard for uniform resource names, defining and approving. And What they need is, we've got sort of three of the four requirements. You have to specify syntax, you have to specify the semantics, you have to have working code to illustrate it, and then you've got to have a community that backs it up.
Two independent.
Two independent, yes, you have to implement in code in two examples, right? And you need a community. We've got the first three. We've got the definitions, we've got different implementations of using it, and we need a group that's willing to look over the nuts and bolts of it and say, yes, this should go to them and be presented as a proposal.
Right. So. I mean, I think that if this community agrees that this approach is a useful tool, we are obligated in a very fundamental way to go that step, because otherwise it is a little toy in a walled garden of classes. And people like you, who are on the digital library side, are not going to implement services around it unless it is somehow a pan, you know, a beyond classic sanctioned way of doing things. Now, if it remains a little walled garden thing, it can still be used by people who know what they're doing to do sort of content aggregation and filtering and all this sort of stuff. And it's useful on that level. And we can all say interventions, we can throw these things at each other's systems and get back useful information. But if we don't go the extra step of getting it sanctioned, I mean, it's not really a URN until that string is in the registry.
That's right.
Then the possibility of this working in 30 years inside architectures and repositories that we can't even imagine, except maybe the Davids and the Hughes, it is much diminished simply because it's too idiosyncratic.
Amen. That's one of the interesting things about this work. Neil has the problem, but Neil's always crazy. Neil's like AI. I remember 15 years ago, there was Neil saying, you know, there's this thing called Gopher. You could have like a word here and then have like plus something in like a dictionary come down over the network. And I said, I have these CDRs. They work fine. and he bugged me about it, and he said, there's this other thing showing up. And finally, like 1995, David Smith goes and like builds the first network version of Perseus. But then, of course, everybody believes that, you know, it's true. Nobody remembers that Neil was saying this, because Neil now is talking about, you know, GIS, or he's talking about something else. And it's always, you know, something which sounds crazy because it's not what anyone's figured out yet. And by the time everyone figures out, they forgot they didn't always believe it. And I think to some extent, that's what the CTS is. I remember when Neil first started talking about it, well, you don't want to do all this stuff. What are you doing? Why are you replicating work that's already happened to get the functionality? I didn't understand, but it was a protocol and implementation in my head. I also only came to understand more recently, years later, as I was starting to flit around in the cyber infrastructure world, that in fact what Neil had identified was a layer of functionality that does not exist, that is invisible to the dominant infrastructure that libraries work with, just the book. And users do not care about books. They care about ideas and content, which sometimes happen by accident to coincide with books, but only by accident. They care about the stuff inside the book because they care. They don't care about collections. They don't care about libraries. They don't care about it. They care about their ideas. And what Neil basically has said is you have to be able to reference the stuff that counts, as opposed to having a useless library catalog, a moderate, a fuzzy library catalog that gives you very coarse data that which you have to meet, which assumes you already pick up the goddamn book and analyze it with your eyeballs and your brain. And then do things by hand. So Neil was able to see that layer that was missing. So now he has, because he started years ahead of time, he's got the intellectual work, which is simplification and reduction, and which is the hard thing, is when you're done, it looks like it's easy. And that's incredibly difficult. That we can now add to this new cyber infrastructure so that from the start, it will actually be able to address the services that we need and then have all the ancillary services. Because only when you have a model for saying you have citations that need to be used, only then does the problem arise of automatically finding and generating those citations, which is a whole other story. But because you defined an object of interest, you therefore imply the need for a whole set of services and infrastructure to both produce and manage and build on that, which requires this thought. I think it's incredible. And I think the only thing I'm proud of, the one thing I'm proud of in my relationship with CTS is I think I'm matching you out of classical text services to canonical text services. Mm-hmm. So that you would not, you know, trap yourself in the backwoods of...
I originally wanted to do the Microsoft thing and just call it like text services. You know, take the totally generic name and claim it. But that turned out to be a registered trademark. So at the very last second, I had to make something out of it.
And so I think, again, one of the things we need to do is make sure that as CTS is implemented within some generic digital library infrastructure, I would go with Fedora. We do it immediately also with non-classical materials to demonstrate right away its generality of function.
I'm working on a couple of different projects at the moment that have a lot of biblical needs. And I think it's obvious that
they want the other discipline of humanities that already has solved most of the logical problem of how to cite things.
So maybe we can talk about that. So now we've got our two.
Hello.
Back to the center of gravity, changing or not. We seem to be in a relatively stable gravity here among friends. I see little signs, a few signs of the discipline dying.
Signs or no signs? Like, few as in no, a few as in initial.
I don't see them, frankly. I think that there are still people crazy enough about
it. It's not, I wouldn't say dying, it's stagnation, it's steady state.
Okay. Well, whether you want to...
We're such marginal creatures that we'll never be driven out of our niche.
Suspended animation, whatever our state is, I think that rumors of our death may be slightly exaggerated. I do think, actually, that the change is coming slowly and from within, and that people are more and more aware that you haven't done your homework if you're not using what resources are available electronically or what methods of dissemination are available electronically. And so I think it's time to take a cloak of the gracious victor instead of the underdog who's, who's shouting that the rest of you are dead.
The worst that can happen is what Greg said happened to Neil, that you know, everybody forgets that he did it first,
exactly.
And they think it was their idea.
I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that actually the face of classics for many people is an open site that is open to all, that has translations available, that has background information available. And so to say that discipline is dying, that means that the public face is dying. Public face is, you know, is the people in this room. And, we are going to be that more and more.
I think people
are going to come over to this.
I think
so the rhetoric can, you know, the rhetoric doesn't need to be, we're killing them off. They're coming over.
It's more fun to say it that way, but you're probably right. Now, I think that the... I'll tell you my great one of my frustrations, which is saying... In 1994, one of the first TEI... One of the Green Book come out, I mean, something like that. Say 94. That is when we officially had published how to do an edition. An old-fashioned edition. You had to do... If you... And that's how you had structured data upon which you perform operations. And I don't know of any, how many classical editions, serious editions that the editors have done, have we produced in the last, that are TEI conformant. And instead, we're producing, insofar as we produce, and editions are not the center of the field, but they're sort of a flagship kind of data structure. And no one has created an up-to-date edition. Due diligence was not done. And it's like more than 10 years. And there's, given the vitriolic rhetoric of people who do that kind of work, it's hard to be charitable.
Well, it's always nice to go with the vitriolic rhetoric. That's a great tradition in our field. So enjoy indulging it as well. Mark would know what I'm talking about.
But it doesn't help. You're quite right.
You know, critical traditions are just not where it's at. I mean, that's just, you know, that's...
But you see, this is how much...
And the TEI, what has been published in TEI? And what has become actually searchable and retrievable with TEI in any field?
How about all of Perseus?
Well, very lightly coded. One of the things about the MOTCQ was huge. You could have done it, and Lord knows I actually did it, and that's smart to come out. The other thing to keep in mind with what Tom's saying is you can't get a PhD in any of my disciplines doing critical editions. We don't do critical editions at all.
Or if you get a PhD, you won't get hired, right?
Yeah,
but you see,
and so there is this disconnect in some ways between the rhetoric behind the CBI and the reality of the marketplace. And I don't know what that's.
I mean, the problem is, of course, I think that to some extent, if it's perceived as a return to the 19th century, then of course, it, you know, you can't do it. But in fact, it's the 19th century. It's seeded in the 19th century, but it's the same thing. But it's a qualitatively different beast. What we need are knowledge. But if you think of what is the mission of the field, and if you think of the mission of the field as a mean, the texts are a mean. You want to get them in people's brains. And to limit as many brains as possible. I think that's a pretty powerful way of thinking about it. Then the mechanism, the big job of the field is to replicate itself, get Greek out there. Then you get things like what they're doing with the multi-tex homework look really big, which is try to get this really complex information in a form that people can actually make use of. Now that is like what editors do, but it's different from what editors do. It's what editors wanted to do, but they couldn't do it in print. They couldn't do it with those techniques, but there's a whole new set of techniques such that even if it looks, even if you could say this is an addition, it's not the same thing. It's a superset, and I think there are so many new features, so many new quantitative features you can point at, there's a qualitatively different beast in play. And I think to some extent, I have no doubt that it's that what we really need is this infrastructure for all of our primary materials, whether it's archaeological evidence, museum objects, or text, to be, you know, cut automatically alive, such that it can customize itself for you and get into your brain. And how do we do that? What labels we use? I don't know. I mean, and nobody has to share that perspective. That's just where I come from.
In the meantime, before that thing starts working, we need things that actually get the job done.
But I think, you know, I mentioned Mastronardi and Cynthia Damon. I'm really impressed with that.
And
that's what I want, intelligent, just conversation.
And actually, those are the people, the
Bobcasters.
Those are the people who are just, you know, solid in their field, and Bob Caster makes sure that his graduate students get the Diogenes handout, and they are, right, that's what they're working with, and if they're not working with it, they are not competent graduate students, right?
Yeah.
That's what you want.
Yeah.
You want them to know what the notes in the critical, critical apparatus mean. That's what you teach them. You teach them, and you teach them how to use.
But bear in mind, who learns how to use a slide rule anymore? I.e., an instrument, and that's what a critical apparatus is as currently written. And that's what we've heard about the difficulty of using ERPSA. As a slide rule is a tool in which you invest labor to get approximate data. But when it gets replaced with a calculator, it vanishes. And so essentially, the TEI text is the calculator. And because it can be much clearer, can provide better results, and the middle, you know, the app crit with all its weird abbreviations that nobody in any field ever heard, who doesn't make them, likes, is the slide rule. Which, and a slide rule is a magnificent thing. Slide rule is a tremendous instrument, but it's not an end in itself. The end is, you know, that gives computation. In this case, it's thinking about the text.
Yeah, but of course, the critical apparatus is discussion. The critical apparatus is more than the edition of old manuscripts that underlie it, right? It is a judgment of these editions, and it's a judgment in a way that you actually can read a page and still have some access to the apparatus. There's a reason for that. There's a reason for what the eye can hold in one book. If I have four monitors, yeah, that situation changes, and I can go for a different
It would be interesting to see if we actually did a user interface study.
I want your age monitor.
Yes.
Of you know, how much you could actually quantify what you can learn from different formats.
Exactly.
Yeah, where are our box lunches? What is our score?
They're
outside. They're outside. So,
let's
have more comments on this, referring to a more general discussion. Because, of course, the CTS is totally general. But why don't we take a break?